Struggle to balance the soft and the open and the compassionate with hardness, with solidity. This is a struggle. In that image, something so hard should open one's heart. Today we speak about international justice. What can one say about international justice? What do we mean by justice and how does it exist? I will tell you about local justice first. I will talk about how it appears in lives here, in small lives, because, in fact, all politics are local. You may know that six fires and then seven fires have been set in the city against so-called black churches in St. Louis City and in Jennings. Reverend Roderick Burton of the new Northside Missionary Baptist Church, the second church to be attacked by fire, posted online that he had not heard a single word of support from the rest of the faith community in St. Louis. But then he got a call very quickly from Christ Church Episcopal downtown. And then other congregations and other religious communities started to call him and connect with him and other congregations that had been set fire. The Unitarian Universalist clergy, all of us, immediately gathered together through email, wrote a letter which we signed and then hand-delivered to the targeted congregations. Others responded likewise, and by Wednesday of the next week, more than 200 leaders and members of various churches and synagogues showed up for a noon prayer meeting at Northside Baptist, New Northside Missionary Baptist. A preacher there in the program spoke about the diversity of the room and proclaimed, "This is what the body of Christ looks like." Another prayed from Ephesians on the one Lord, the one faith, the one baptism that unifies us all. And then Reverend Burton got up very quickly and astutely and honored the religious diversity in that room and in the city and praised the presence of Jews, especially Reverend Rabbi Talvi, who was a friend of his, he said, in part because they had shared a jail cell together. This is St. Louis. This is St. Louis. These people all coming together to strengthen one another against someone whose heart, after a year and a half of people crying out about injustice and saying, let everyone be treated, especially black people, to be treated like everyone else, to be part of everyone else, to be part of the community and given fairness, equal treatment, justice, that someone after so long would still have their hearts hardened enough to want to attack churches as they have been attacked for hundreds of years in this country. We know the history of hatred and violence, the way it appears. But the response is different now. The response is one of togetherness and unity and hope. When the chief of police got up to speak, one white man, young guy, yelled, "Black Lives Matter." And Reverend Burton said, "That's right." But then the white guy said, "No, indicating Chief Dodson. He has to say it. Black Lives Matter." And then Reverend Burton went into like a 30 seconds sermon. It was a perfectly crafted sermon about how all lives matter and that is the ground upon which we have to stand. Unity, togetherness, oneness, that all of us matter, including black lives. And then he let the chief speak. And Chief Dodson spoke about not resting until justice had been done and we had punished the arsonist, for he had chosen a fight he could not win. And of course, it was at that moment that I thought about this sermon about justice. What is international justice? What is local justice? It is not enough to see evil has been done, to know unfairness and to name it. It is not enough to name evil acts as wrong, to condemn those acts, or to try to stop them with force if necessary. It is not enough to get rid of the wrong, to merely seek punishment and vengeance of those who do wrong. Far too often, this is the only thing we expect the police, the only thing we expect our court systems to do. No, the ultimate goal must be reformation. It must be changing of human hearts, the softening and reconnecting of people in unity and community. We must live by a spirit that brings healing and reconciliation to human living, even in what we call our criminal justice system, our civil justice system. Though it's difficult, it's very difficult. As the story of Moses explains, hearts will be hard, and the struggle to get free from oppression and difficulty to the land of peace and justice will be difficult. We are all aware of the limits of the system. We get frustrated with the system often. And people tell jokes, they talk about judges. They say, don't worry about catching, we're going into flu season. And they say, don't worry about catching a flu from a judge because the flu virus needs a human body to be its host. People say, the judges have no hearts. Well, most of them are struggling to make difficult decisions in difficult places. We had a wonderful program. I was out of town and didn't get to participate in it when we had a judge within this congregation speak about what it meant to be a judge and allow anyone to ask any question they wanted of a judge. But we tell these jokes and we tell these stories because we're frustrated with the system and we know it doesn't quite work. I heard once about a guy who'd gone through family court, difficulties in his family, separation with he and his wife and kids, judgments being made against him, and he finally went to a bar to cool after all these judgments had come against him, and sitting at the bar, he cried out, All those judges in family court are stupid jerks. And suddenly someone in the back of the room cries out, I resent that. That's insulting. You can't say that. And the guy said, what? Are you one of the family judges? And he goes, no, I'm a stupid jerk. We'd like to think that it's these individuals that are the source of the problem. But it's in the whole of society. It's our attitude about how we seek reconciliation, about how we see justice and what we expect, how we treat one another. When someone set fires, it's not enough to simply find that person and put them in jail. What was essential was that we all gathered together across all the other things that divide us, against religious differences, against cultural differences, the segregation of North and South in the city. We came together, some of us, embodying that heart, that soft and open heart that is the center of any good community, any just community. I like that idea that was quoted by Brian in his sermon last week. To let injustice be the only focus of our intention is to praise the devil. We must focus, first of all, as a spiritual practice, on what is good and what is praiseworthy. We also must focus on what is wrong in the world. Oftentimes people working so hard to be peaceful and happy end up not noticing the evil at all. I have known Unitarians, like other reformers and thinkers, who get stuck in critical thinking and insightful analysis, talking about what's wrong with this world or what's wrong with this church or what's wrong with my friends or people at work, focusing over and over on what's wrong until that's all that is left. It seems as though the world is filled with poison and sorrow and complaining. So we must turn back always to that quiet, still center, or to the vision, the glorious vision. There's one song, Turn Back. It's an old hymn, 100 years old or more, and it's in our hymnal. Earth shall be fair and all her people one. Not till that hour shall God's whole will be done. Not now, now, even now, once more, from earth to sky, peals forth in joy our old, undaunted cry, earth shall be fair and all her people one. Earth shall be just and compassionate and equitable with all her people one. This vision must be held up. But for all the world to be just, each part, each corner, each locality must embody that goodness, that fairness, that justice. Theologically speaking, it's good to remember that all politics are local. It's an application of the adage, think globally, act locally, and the idea that as above, so below. A mystical idea. In Matthew's Gospel, Jesus says, if you forgive others when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. In the Beatitudes, he speaks about those who create justice and how they will be blessed by that work. And he does that knowing how hard it is, how much resistance there is, how hearts become hard, and pain and injustice remain. International justice is an expression only of local, particular justice, the individual. The local, the regional, the national, the international, theological, all are inextricably linked together for good and ill. We cannot separate them out. We cannot work on global issues without paying attention to what's going on in our own backyard, nor should we think that what happens in St. Louis does not affect others. Brian and I both received a letter from the Washington State, a Unitarian Universalist minister there, expressing concern that the black churches were not being noticed as they were being attacked. And we were proud and glad to be able to, Brian wrote back and told this minister, it's all right, we're trying. Robert Coles, a child psychologist, was writing back in the 70s and 80s. In 1990, he published a book called The Spiritual Life of Children. It was a book that was given to me as a gift when I had joined in my first ministry. And one of the stories in that is he tells about a dialogue between a Jewish boy and girl, a brother and sister. And the brother is about to go for his bar mitzvah. He's going to go through that ritual. And his sister asks him if he's going to do it. And he says, of course, why wouldn't I do it? She says, well, if you do it, you're going to have to say something about the unfairness that you, as a male, get to do it, that everything in our practice is about males and that women are relegated to the side, that women are diminished, that women do not have equal rights, and this is not fair. It is not right. You're going to have to say something. And, of course, the boy starts talking about, well, if I say something, it might cause Grandpa a heart attack. He tries to find all sorts of reasons why he can't speak out about the injustice. It's not what the ritual's about. Or, you know, he's struggling. Then he starts talking about how if he goes against the will of his ancestors, as if he's erasing their lives. He says the whole point of this is to honor my place in the flow of our people. He begins to struggle with the very notion of justice. The two of them, these young children, struggling with larger and larger issues, realizing that what matters in this little relationship, this little moment in one boy's life and his relationship with his sister, has echoes out to the end of the world. It's very much like the story of Job that Brian quoted last week. It's primarily struggles with this question about justice in the world. The people who come to advise Job, his friends, as Brian pointed out, come to comfort him. They're really terrible at pastoral care. In response to this question, why do bad things happen to good people like Job? Unfortunately to Job, they say really cruel things. They basically say you're a bad person and that's why you're suffering. There must be a reason for it, a good reason, and we can figure it out. But they're not trying really to comfort the afflicted. Really what they're struggling with, what they're trying to do is to defend a core Jewish concept that God is the source of justice, that God is the paradigm of a righteous, good, and just person and tells us how we should be living in our own lives, inspires us and enables us to be just and compassionate and equitable in our relationships. But looking at this frustrating situation in which his children have died and all his money is gone and his health is failing, the most natural response from those who are his friends comes from his wife. His wife, having lost her children, lost her wealth and security, and looks at the universe and sees what kind of world we are in, tells her husband, just curse God and die. Admit that the world is unfair and give up. But Job does not stop there. He wants justice. He believes in justice. He is seeking equity and fairness, a world made fair with all her people. One, he wants to find that power in the world, just as the founder of this church, William Elliott, did. He was concerned with the social consequences of theology, not just erudite theological questions. He saw a neo-Calvinism in this country that was fusing American culture with a desire to sanctify injustice and to affirm punishment and vengeance in the social system. Margaret Fuller and Dorothea Dix, John Murray to Olympia Brown, all of these people saw the way in which the image that people had of the universe was poisoning how we treated with one another, and believed that the image that we had of the universe and of human nature should change the way that we treat one another. And so they spoke out on education and drug abuse and prostitution. They engaged these things openly, liberally, creatively, struggling with the tension to set strong laws and yet be open-hearted and compassionate. One of the most amazing events of the past decade has been this monumental shift about gay and lesbian people. The change is amazing, and I still don't understand how it happened in this country. How it is that even the Supreme Court would declare the equality of human beings and affirm equal rights. But the journey is still very far from over. There's a man named Subi Nahas. He's an advocate for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender refugees in the world. He came from Syria. He grew up in a small town in Syria where he was belittled and threatened for being different. He always knew he was different, always knew he was different. His parents knew he was different. They didn't know how. And then once a doctor, after having studied him, told his parents, he's gay. And of course, then they began to really fear that he was going to do something wrong, that he was going to be threatened. And they knew the danger was all around him, the hatred and the oppression. And when the ISIS, the radicals in Syria had come in and taken over his village, he felt very threatened. And then one day they gathered up a whole bunch of people that they had decided were somehow subversive. They beat them, they threatened, they yelled at them, they starved them for days. Somehow, miraculously, they decided to let him live, let those people go, but immediately he had to run from the country. He ran to Turkey, and there he began to become an activist. For gay and lesbian rights. He heard about people. He began through the internet and through social relationships, began to find out that there were those who affirmed who he was as a human being, who treated him fairly. It awakened him up, and he began to get engaged in the world. And then a childhood friend from his little village, who was also a refugee, identified him as a gay person and began to threaten him and said that he would turn people against him and make sure he was murdered. And so again, he had to flee. Again, he had to journey. And finally, after a long and hard struggle, He spoke at the first ever forum at the United Nations Security Council in September. This was an event that was nurtured and encouraged by the Unitarian Universalist United Nations Office. This Security Council gathering that would focus specifically on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights of the refugees, to see that as one piece of the whole picture, to treat not everyone just as refugees, but to realize that there were unique individual struggles within those people who are seeking refuge in a cruel and unfair situation. So let us all seek to make the world more just and fair, more compassionate and kind. We must be strong, we must set clear limits, and yet we must always struggle to keep our hearts open and hope for a more glorious and blessed future, drawing on the powers, whatever we name those powers, to do that good work over and over again, until someday the world shall witness wonders, as described in our closing hymn, hymn number 139, Wonders Still the World Shall Witness.